Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got a wonderful guest today, Dr. Eric Shapira. He's a clinical gerontologist, but his book is delightful. I liked it as soon as I saw the cover, without even reading the inside. It's got an elephant matriarch on the front cover, and it's called A New Wrinkle. And this is information about what we can learn from the older generation so that we can enjoy our maturing years with a sense of zest and enthusiasm that our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents didn't even have a hope or a prayer of even imagining. Welcome, Dr. Shapira, to the show.
Thank you, Donna, for having me.
Now, you're an interesting man. You were a dentist.
I was.
For over 30 years.
Wow.
And then you decided to become a clinical gerontologist. Why?
Well, I had unfortunately I had a neck injury some 5 years ago, and I had been studying gerontology way before I left practice because I was teaching geriatric aesthetic dentistry for over 20 years, 25 years in the dental schools and beyond. And I decided that I should get some more credibility by getting a master's in clinical gerontology. And then, unfortunately, I had a neck injury, had subsequent surgery, couldn't bend my neck like I used to, and had to leave practice. And luckily, I had this gerontology degree to fall back on. Still didn't think I knew enough. Went back for a second degree, got a master's in health administration, so I could kind of help guide people around the system. And just when you think you've got a handle on it, it changes. So, you know, you learn by experience that change is the only constant in life, and I continue to study to be a better student so that I can be a better teacher and help others.
Well, you have so much good information in this book. Your details that you cover, when I read some of the numbers, I just went, gasp, this is just amazing. Like, what is it, 80 million baby boomers
Yep.
that are going to be going into that maturing level of life?
You know, thing is that somebody turns 50 every 7 seconds, and 1,000 people an hour are turning 65. And the fastest growing cohort in our society are people over the age of 85. So we have a very big contingent of people living longer than statistics allow for, and that's because our system has improved so much, and because we eat better, we live better, we have
mm-hmm.
more things to keep us going. But in effect, the biggest cohort of people in this age group ever in the history of mankind, and we're not prepared.
Right. And one of the things that this is affecting big time is the working marketplace.
Oh, absolutely.
And the irony is that when I'm meeting people that are in their 60s and 70s, they're not retiring. One, they can't afford to. But two, they say, wait a minute, I don't feel like I'm Methuselah. I can still bend over and touch my toes, and I've got a brain, and I'm active, and I'm healthy. And
right.
They're finding that the old perspectives of, gee whiz, when you turn 65, then that's the end of it. Forget it. That's being thrown out the window.
Absolutely.
And they're really rebuilding their lives into a whole new level, and they're starting brand new careers, not... You know,
yeah.
I don't know your age, but you're not. You've started a brand new career. You went back to school.
I'm 29 and holding. Yes.
You're 29 and holding. Oh, I'm 33. So
I'm right in there with the baby boomers. But I can tell you, 30% of people over 65 are not working not because they don't want to, but because they've been laid off.
Mm-hmm.
And about 23% of that statistic are reinventing themselves, like I did.
Right.
And it's a kind of a neat thing. I know a man who's 89. He just started his sixth business. He's an engineer. an inventor, and he invents something, and he markets it, and he gets it going, and he forms a company around it, and then the next thing you know, he sells that company, and he starts on his next invention.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being extremely creative with his life. He's staying youthful. He's having fun. He's stimulating his mind. And I don't see him leaving the planet too soon, because he's keeping active, physically
right.
And mentally.
I just had a meeting with a gentleman that's been in the broadcasting industry. I've known him for a number of years. And he said, I'm 89 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, holy Joseph, that you're really doing well for 89, because when I was a kid, somebody that was 89, of course, anybody over the age of 10 was old. But when you're a kid and you hear the term 89,
mm-hmm.
you go, oh, my goodness, that's really old. Well, for his generation, the likelihood of him living to be over 100 is not that far removed.
No, it's not. And if you were born in the middle 1970s, you have about a 20% chance of living to be over 100.
Mm-hmm.
Which
that's
is
just incredible.
Really good.
Absolutely incredible. Now, you say 6 keys to living a long, healthy life are stimulating the mind, which we've just discussed, staying
mm-hmm.
social, eating right, getting enough rest, experiencing intimacy in a relationship,
mm-hmm.
And remaining ambulatory.
Right.
Now, these things, having a passion for life, the gentleman that I talked to this afternoon, 89 years of age, he gets up, he goes to work every single day. Once in a while he misses, but if he's not there in the office, he's still able to drive. He has to use a cane now, but he is still able to drive, and he's very sharp. And he said, you know, this is what I do. And he's in work, at work, he's talking to people all the time. He's doing social activities, not to the degree he did when he was in his 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, it's pretty good. But he really works at taking good care of himself, because he does not want to not be able to do that to
mm-hmm.
a degree.
Well,
but
if you
my goodness.
If you look at this guy, and you look at it empirically, he has a sense of purpose. And that's what working is all about. For those people that are lucky enough to be retired and have a nest egg to retire with, if they sit around and veg out, then they're not going to live as long, number one. Number two, I suggest for people that leave work early and who are not working to give their gifts away. And that would be number seven on that list. Would be to give your gifts away. We don't know
mm-hmm.
what gifts we have until we give them away. And I'm talking about volunteering. We all
yes.
have a history and a plethora of experiences and information and knowledge that we can share with others. So why not go to a hospital and read to somebody who can't read? Why not go be a foster grandparent to a child that doesn't have any role models? You know, these
mm-hmm.
types of things which will give you purpose in life. And I think that's the other key. Besides nurturing your inner child, which would be number eight, and we all tend to suppress that nascent imp inside of us, the curiosity, the non-responsible child that loves life and stays free and has fun, we push that down inside of us as we grow older and stay to the rules of society and the rules that we make for ourselves, and yet we need to lighten up and enjoy life, and that's
mm-hmm.
the other part of the formula.
Well, I think, too, I don't care what your age is, when you get locked into particular patterning where you are isolated,
yes.
then you buy into a particular persona. You don't have to be the techie expert in the world. But by being involved with other people,
mm-hmm.
that is going to give a purpose and stretch your mind. And I think that it's a shame in our culture, although I'm seeing it changing, that we have isolated the younger generation from the older generation.
Mm.
There are gifts that each of them can exchange with each other and everything in between.
Of course.
It's so valuable. You have a wonderful story in your book about a relative of yours, Nanny.
Oh, yes.
Would you talk about Nanny? She's your grandmother on your mother's side.
She
what
is.
What a woman. What
She's
a woman.
She was very brave and very very industrious her whole life. She made lots of sacrifices. But when I was a little boy, she took care of me because both my parents worked. And this woman was fairly strict, but at the same time was strict with loving arms and hands. And she told me a story about her life when I was a child, which, you know, was hard to believe as a child, but I was fascinated by it. And amazingly enough, when I waited for my present book, A New Wrinkle, What I Learned from Older People Who Never Acted Their Age, to come out of the publishing house, I was kind of stymied because I was writing and writing and writing for 2 years, and then in the last year I spent proofing and all this type of thing, and then there was nothing. And then all of a sudden one day I sat down and started writing this story that my grandmother told me. When she was 15 years old, she ran away from home looking for this Austro-Hungarian soldier that she had fallen in love with as a student at school. And she was still, you know, young. She was 15.
Mm-hmm.
But in those days, that was fairly old, because if you look at Emperor Franz Joseph, he married a 15-year-old princess and had children by her. So that was not too old to be married and take on responsibility. But she ran away just before World War I in Europe. She lived in a little village near Vienna. And as the story goes, there were many trials and tribulations in her life. She was kidnapped by gypsies and so on and so forth. And finally ended up finding this man and marrying him and following him around the trenches during the war to take care of him until he was killed.
Oh, wow.
And then she lost a child on the way out of the war zone back to her village. And she was very beautiful. And when she got back to the village, where she hadn't been for several years, the elders in the village voted to send her to the castle of Emperor Franz Joseph as a mistress so that she could get food for her village. They were starving.
Mm-hmm.
And so she became his mistress for several years before he died. And she kept telling me about these big parchments that he would give her with a red seal on it where she could get food for the village. And I kept saying, "Nanny, do you have any of those parchments?" And she said, no, we had to turn them in. I turned them in, and I got the food for the village, and they took the paper. So that was gone. And
wow.
But the part of history that remains is the story itself, and now I'm telling it in another book that I'm writing about her.
Well, I think so many times we forget that everyone has a story, and like your nanny lived in an era and a time, and she did what she had to do to accomplish what needed to be done. And you look at that and you understand what people go through. You look through life in their particular aspect of perspective.
Yeah, different
and
eyes.
I think that is so powerful. I really do.
It is, and it's an amazing story, and so I'm trying to write it from all aspects of her life in this story, and I'm all the parts, which is a little difficult because I don't have all the facts, so it's historical fiction. And this woman died at 100. She lived to be 100 years young.
Mm-hmm.
She had a great constitution. She was a loving grandmother and mother to my mother, and a great cook. I learned to cook from her. And I used to ask her for her recipes, and she'd say, "Oh, a little bit of this and a little bit of that." That's the way I still cook, a little bit of that and a little bit of this. So
that sounds like me. Every once in a while, I put in too much of something, and I go, whoops, I goofed.
You changed the recipe, and it came out great. But this was creativity for her. I mean, she owned a restaurant, and she made up her own recipes when she moved to the United States and met my grandfather. So it was a great story. My mom was an only child, and we were my nanny's only grandchildren, and it was an interesting part of life. And I used to play in the basement because my grandfather had a lot of great things down there, and for me it was a different world. And I learned about life, playing down there with some of the antiques and being in that environment with people from a different generation, a different genre, a different time.
Mm-hmm.
And a different space, and it gave me a different perspective on myself. And it wasn't until I sat down to write this book and examined the lives of the people in my family and the older people that I knew in my life that I got a whole different perspective on my own life, and I was able to benchmark those traits that I took from these people for myself, for my future life and my future life's work, which is now gerontology, being an aging specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to use this as a teaching tool for other people who may be depressed. I know I had a client who was employed for 40-some years, 50 years almost, lost his job, was sitting around pining away, got totally depressed,
mm-hmm.
couldn't get out of the blue funk, and finally got a job offer after 6 years. And the day that he was to go to work, he woke up in the morning and had a heart attack and died. And his wife buried him in the casket with his acceptance letter because he put his whole entire self-worth and self-being on this job. The job
mm-hmm.
was his life, the job was everything. And when you step back from that, the epiphany I had was, I looked in the mirror one day when I wasn't doing dentistry anymore, and I said, who was I? Who am I? Because we tend to identify ourselves by what we do and not who we are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And when you learn to do that, you get a whole different perspective on Eric Shapiro, the person, or Donna Sebo, the person. And it gives you some insight into who you are and how you think. And that's a
mm-hmm.
whole process about growing older and maturing and reevaluating and reassessing who you are, what you like, what you want to do. And it's a process, and it changes.
Yes, it does change. And you've brought up a very good point. It has been, I think, statistically true. Now, I don't know about today, but it was known that when men quit work, not with women, God knows, we never run out of toilets to clean. But men, just what you've said, it's particularly male-oriented. Now, that's
yeah.
changing a bit.
Yes,
but
it is.
Men usually were dead 3 years after they retired when they didn't have anything else to be involved with. Just
mm-hmm.
exactly the scenario that you described. Now, this guy lasted 6 years.
He did.
But the average was 3. And so I like to think the men are beginning to wake up a little bit. But it's an orientation. It's an indoctrination. So if you have the good fortune, and the same thing can go with gals as well. But again, I just think Mother Nature said, I'm sorry, but you can't die young, you gals. You've got to keep on cleaning or whatever. I mean, it never runs out. But I wanted to bring up something that you mentioned, and that's depression.
Yeah.
Now, I have been reviewing some material regarding depression and medications and so on and so forth, and it's always been disturbing to me that we're dealing with chemistry. And I've known of so many older people that became non-functional because of too many medications.
Yep.
And the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is prescribing.
Right.
And when you hear people taking 14, 16, 22 medications, you want to say, excuse me, where are the doctors?
The average. 20 is the
yeah.
average.
20? Are you serious?
Over the age of 65.
Oh, that is unreal to me.
20 pills a day.
That is unreal.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about vitamin pills either. We're
talking
about
pills, all kinds of
medications.
Pills.
Yeah, I mean, that's just unreal to me. Let's address this because one of the comments that you make in your book is about the unguided use of medication
mm-hmm.
and how do you make a determination based on that person's body chemistry? It has to do with what they eat, what they don't eat. There's so many things that go on. Sometimes people's bodies don't metabolize these medications and they have side effects. What can we do with this?
I think people need to put more faith in their pharmacists, first of all, and
mm-hmm.
and go to one pharmacy if they can go to any one pharmacy, go to one pharmacy. And that way the pharmacist can keep on top of the medications. And when you get a new medication, you should have a consult with the pharmacist, let alone the doctor. But the doctors don't take the time to do it. They write you the script, and you go home, and you fill it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's the pharmacist who, in the long run, can take responsibility for making sure there's no interactions between the other medications or drugs or vitamins, if you will, that you're taking. Because a lot of people are taking herbs which don't have any guidelines to them by the FDA, and any vitamin or herb in excess can be a drug and have a side effect.
Yes.
I can remember someone coming in to see me and having bruises all over their body, and, my first job is to be a provider who looks for those things, and I'm a mandated reporter because of I'm a healthcare professional, and I thought this person was being abused.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this person was in pain, was taking lots of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories as well as aspirin and other medication, but when I became a detective, I found out she was taking ginkgo biloba to stimulate her mind. It's an herb. It's supposed to help clarity of the mind and make you a little bit smarter, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And she was competing for a vice presidency in her company, so she was taking gobs of this stuff.
Oh, no.
And what it does, it's an herb that depresses your platelets, which causes your blood to clot. So she was not clotting, and she was bleeding under her skin. And this was potentiated by the aspirin and the Nassades that mm-hmm. she was taking and exacerbated the problem. So she probably also had internal bleeding. And she was anemic, and she was pale, and she was not feeling good and weak. And so I got her right in the hospital. But my first thought was she was being abused, and I've got to call Adult Protective Services. So these are things that you have to look at, that drugs and herbs can also become, vitamins and herbs can also become drugs when used in excess.
Right, and dependent, if you're taking aspirin, for example, it's already a thinner. And we have a member of our family that this male, and he's of a, you know, he's got plenty of poundage, but if he takes an aspirin a day, his gums begin to bleed. I mean, it thins his blood so much. As soon as he stops taking it, he doesn't have that problem.
Well, vitamin E and garlic also thin the blood. So
right. If he's taking vitamins on top of that, then it's just adding to it.
Right.
It's just
Absolutely.
Creating a compound. You bring out some very good information about Alzheimer's, which I thought was pertinent. You talk about proteins that dissolve the tau protein, that's mm-hmm. T-A-U
right,
protein,
the plaque.
In the brain, responsible for causing disruption of nerve impulses.
Mm-hmm.
What is the latest on this that they have found?
Well, there's lots of companies and research organizations like the Buck Organization, the Buck Foundation in Marin County that are for geriatric research. They're all working together all over the world, Pfizer and Japan and there's a new drug, experimental drug in Scotland called Rember. It's Rember, which also is enzymatic and tends to break down tau proteins. The Buck Institute has done some research with rats where they inject an Alzheimer's gene into the rat. They put it in a maze and it can't find the cheese anymore. And then they use this enzyme, anti-tau plaque enzyme, inhibitor that breaks down the tangles, the neurotangles in the brain, and then put the rat back in the maze and it finds the cheese. It's pretty amazing. So it's in an experimental program right now, and once it becomes something in pill form, you got another drug you can take to combat this this genetic dementia type disease. And there's a genetic component to it. And you can have your blood tested for it. It's found on gene 19. Most people won't avail themselves of that opportunity, but I think, you know, people should and should be preventive, because at least if they know they have the gene and they have a propensity towards it, doesn't necessarily mean they'll get it, but they have a 50% probability that they would. They can be prepared for it, and that's the most important thing.
Well, I do know about that gene. There was research done here at the University of Washington,
mm-hmm.
and I had a guest on my show whose family was the first one that the genetic pattern was revealed, and every once in a while it skips a generation, but he fortunately was skipped, but he found out about family history after this that was just amazing. And
that's scary.
It really is. He said it was very, very frightening to him, and he said he was so relieved when he found that mm-hmm. he had not received it, and to the best of his knowledge, the members of his family, his immediate family,
right.
It wasn't carried forth through him. But within other members of the family, it has been.
Well,
that's
like the BRCA1, BRCA2 genes that create a higher propensity towards cancer in women and men if you have the genes, mostly found in Ashkenazi Jewish heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin wrote us about it. She said that two people in the family had it. My sister took the genetic test. She had the gene and ended up taking her ovaries out to lower the probability of getting any kind of breast cancer or ovarian cancer. She didn't want to have a hysterectomy, so she goes in every 2 months for scans. I took the genetic test because I wanted to make sure I didn't have it, especially for my kids. and I didn't have the gene. So, you know, one, at least one out of three of us didn't have it. One did, and the other sibling didn't want to take the test. So it's a crapshoot on his side of the family, knowing whether they have it or not. But that's the way it works, and that's the way it works with most genetically passed down genes, if you will. And as far as Alzheimer's is concerned, I think it's going to affect more and more people at an earlier age. It usually starts around 45, if it does start in some respects, and it's a dead end road. And right now, it's non-reversible. And hopefully, in the future, we can either deal with it with gene splicing or using stem cell work to recreate the gene in a healthy manner, and people won't be getting that disease. But it's just a matter of time.
You make a comment in your book, mental illness pervades our society, yet memory loss does not necessarily indicate mental illness.
That's correct.
And there is such a fine line there. There are people that are just, their memory isn't just what it is, but they're not mentally ill, and they don't have Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, even professionals get confused.
That's true. All the time. That's because we're in a fast food, fast paced society. We've got a lot of things on our heads, a lot of things on our minds. We're trying to juggle 18 things at one time, and we can't hold it all. So we need to find other mechanisms to which record our thoughts, write our information down, or record it so we can have it and go back to it and think about it. But it's as I said, it's a very fast-paced, full of knowledge, technological society. We're overfilled with stuff, and there are people now just you know, putting the cell phones in the drawers, going away from their computers, and going into the woods for a week at a time just to decompress. And I think that's a good thing for your brain. The brain needs some rest. It's like a nascent child, and it can. It's like a sponge. It can suck up a lot of things, and it needs to be challenged, but to a point. And then it can become overly exhausted and break down, and then you start to forget things. I have a friend who's got ADD, and normally when I give a lecture, I tell people, you know, you think four times faster than you can hear. So if you finish this lecture before I do, you're free to leave. And with ADD, he's thinking 10 steps ahead of me instead of four, and he can't remember where he put his glasses. And that's extremely frustrating for him, so he buys 10 or 15 pairs of glasses and leaves them all around. And I suggest that, you know, and there's ways of getting around that. You just have to slow yourself down, write things down, and think in a slower manner, and then process it in a different way. He said, well, if I'm 10 steps ahead of everybody and I write things down, I may not remember where I wrote them. And you've got to carry it with you, then you won't forget.
You have a personal story about how you have to stand up for what you know is right for yourself. And you say, you've never let anyone tell you how you should respond to any kind of a disease or physical problem. Mm-hmm. Even though people will express their opinions, you say, no, you follow your intuitive sense, your sixth sense. And you discovered something that was on the body when you were on a beach on the island of Sardinia. Tell us what evolved after that discovery.
I was teaching there, and I was meditating one morning on the beach, and I looked down, and I saw this mole on my calf that looked abnormal to me, but I kind of imprinted it in my gray matter somewhere but had forgotten about it. And when I went home, I was dealing with my dad, who was dying of lung cancer, so I didn't have time to think about anything else but that and helping my mother and helping the family. And just about the time he passed away, my wife said, "You pinched yourself on the back of my knee." And I said, "No, I didn't do that." And I looked in the mirror and I saw this little purple spot, and I pushed on it and it didn't blanch. And I said, "That's a mole, and that's going to come off." So I went to the doctor and I said, "Take this off my knee." And I had a little mole on my forehead that my glasses would catch on when I put my glasses on. I said, "Take that off." And then something out of the blue caught on and said, "Take this thing off my calf. I think there's something wrong with it." He said, "No, there's nothing wrong with it." Long story short, there was something wrong with the thing on my calf and not the thing on the back of my knee or anywhere else. And after they removed most of my my calf. I was a long distance runner. They said, you're never going to run again. I said, don't tell me what I can do and I can't do. And I had a sixth sense about the mole. I said, I'll take it off. You supervise. And the guy was embarrassed. He took it off. And in fact, the nurse called me. She was embarrassed for the doctor. He didn't want to call me. He told her to call me. And so I was right. My intuition paid off. I had a melanoma on my calf, and I caught it in time. And I ran about 30 races after that. I ran them slowly, but I ran them. And I ended up blowing my knee out because it was taking all the heat from my calf, not working the way it used to work. But I still ran. And then I switched to riding a mountain bike and doing other things and walking. There's always a way to keep on moving. And that's why I like to use the frog as a metaphor, because we should all be frogs. Frogs only go forward. They never go backwards. And even when they want to turn around, they have to go forward.
Well, I think that's a very good analogy. I know we're just about out of time, Dr. Shapira. What is your website so people can go and see your information? Your book, A New Wrinkle, What I Learned from Older People Who Never Acted Their Age, is really great. You won a Pinnacle Book Achievement Award.
I did. For
What's your website?
Yes. My website for my book is newwrinklebook.com. That's newwrinklebook.com, and I have a business website, agingmentorservices.com. The book's also on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and you probably can request it at any bookstore.
And you have, what's your other website besides newwrinklebook.com?
Agingmentorservices.com. That's my business website, and the book's on there also.
Agingmentorservices.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for some of you who might be taking care of older members in your family, this would be some very good information for you. But hey, take care of yourself. This is something. If by the grace of the universe you are going to be living to be over 100, why not start preparing yourself so that you can live your life with quality, not just exist? And you're never too old to learn something new and never too young to listen to those that have walked a road of experience before you.
Absolutely.
Dr. Shapira, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a delight. A New Wrinkle is the name of the book. You're welcome. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello, this is Donna. Welcome to the show. Back to the show. Telephone lines are now open. Telephone number is 888 815-975-9756. If you'd like to let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, it would be my delight and my pleasure. I hope you had an utterly fabulous weekend, and we've got a dynamic lineup of guests, and I'll be giving you some information on that. But hearing on the news today that there were 220 million of you out there shopping on the Black Friday, I thought, wow, that's a lot of people out. I wonder if you actually bought things. But anyhow, regardless, we have to have a little bit of compassion for their salespeople. And I just couldn't pass up this little bit of a story that I got. It was about a customer who walked into a store looking for Christmas lights. And this one saleswoman showed her the top brand of lights, but wanting to make sure that each bulb worked, the customer asked her to take them out of the box and plug them in. Sales girl did exactly that. She went over, plugged them in. Every single one of the lights came on. She said, oh, that's great. So she carefully, the salesperson did, placing the string lights back in the box. And she handed the box back to the lady. The lady just looked at her like she was crazy. She said, I don't want this box. It's already been opened. I think that's when you really want to have a quadruple chocolate latte. Yes, with an extra shot of caffeine. It is something. We really need to have an appreciation for good salespeople, because when the holiday seasons come around, there's just so much going on, and there's people that get anxious, they're in a hurry, sometimes they're really rude, they're thoughtless, sometimes they're so exhausted they can't even focus and think because they're carrying all the stuff in the way of goodies and gifts, and their feet are killing them, so they're not always the most pleasant people to be around. So as a customer, be thoughtful and remember that that salesperson is dealing with literally hundreds of people every day, depending on where you are going. So courtesy can go a long way, as well as a nice smile. You cannot imagine how much that means to someone. And making them smile, making them laugh, really, really makes their day. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat now. Quick like a bunny, I want to remind those of you in Western Washington, I am going to be doing a special appearance at the Dickens Fair in Tacoma, Washington. This is held in downtown Tacoma. Wonderful event for the family on December the 11th, a Saturday. Yes, it's going to be in just 2 weeks. It's amazing. And I will be there at King's Bookstore doing many consultations for people, and there's no appointments necessary. I'll be in costume, and I'll be there from 11 until 4 doing readings for people, and part of the proceeds go towards the charity that the fair hosts every year. So this is their fifth year, I believe. It's a terrific family event. Last year we had a bit of snow, so who knows? We may get lucky again this year and have that magical holiday feel come in that is always so much appreciated. So anyway, that's December the 11th. My newsletter is going to be coming out on the 1st, so all the information will be in the newsletter. But if you want to, go to Dickens Fair Tacoma, Washington, and you'll get all of the details about everything that's happening at that special event. Also, for those of you that have a special paranormal story, I'd love to hear your story. I'm collecting, I'm aiming for 100 stories of the paranormal to be able to put together in a book. And this, I think, is important because, well, anytime we can share our experiences with other people, it really can make a difference. It can empower them and make them realize they're not alone in the experiences that they're having, that a lot of other people have gone through them too. So I think the more we can talk about the unique and the unusual, the better off we are. 888-815-9756. Okay, let me tell you who's coming up this week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Gilligan's Island. That's right. And even more, we're going to be talking with Adrima Maynard. And the book is titled Gilligan, Maynard, and Me. So if Gilligan's Island was a show that you thoroughly enjoyed, you're going to learn about a lot of the characters. But more than anything else, who was Gilligan? How did Gilligan evolve? Well, we'll find out all the real information on that. And then on Wednesday, we are going to be talking with Bill Bennett about a wonderful story. I just love this book. It's called The Christmas gift. And believe me, it makes a perfect gift for anyone. It's going to be a story that will touch your heart and your mind. And I'll tell you what, it will touch anybody that really, if you have a hard time figuring out what to give someone for a gift, this is great to know about. Also, we're going to be talking about food on Thursday. We're going to be talking about, well, with Sonia Lilvick. Now, Sonia is going to be in Mexico and will be connecting with us. We're going to be talking about the painted fish and other Mayan feasts. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about foods that, well, I'd say the average Westerner doesn't usually consider healthy, delicious, and something that will be very, very different. So we're going to be doing that on Thursday. And then Natural Feelings. It's music time. King Arison, who is the drummer for Neil Diamond, is going to be with us. This is a second time that we've been able to have him on the show. He's come out with a new CD. This is a man that can play drums like nobody's business. And he's leaving for Africa in January. He's going to be touring Africa and some other countries with Neil Diamond during the year 2011. So we've got some wonderful things to share with you this week. Meanwhile, let's go to our caller, our first caller of the day. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna.
Hi, what's this your first name or initial, dear?
Janine.
Where are you calling from, Janine?
I'm calling from North Carolina.
North Carolina. Beautiful place. Hope you're staying warm down there.
Yeah.
All right. Janine, the first thing that I'm looking at with you is the word disappointment. Now, disappointment seems to have been a companion throughout most of your life, yet you have had a lot of what I call gumption and saying, okay, I can get rid of this companion when I make up my mind as to what I want to do. So in many ways, you have developed a level of disassociation as a discipline to get through some of the disappointing situations you've gone through, but there's been some thinking with you. And you're saying, I'm disappointed again, and this has happened to me so many times, what am I not seeing? And I think what's occurred is that when you were younger, you were indoctrinated with a certain type of attitude, expectation, and it's been so hardwired into you that unless you are mindful about how you're responding to things or what you're doing, you automatically go back into it because it's just been a part of your patterning for so long. And I think it's changing because you're changing. And I think you have made a determination that you do not want a repeating performance of what you have gone through just in the recent past again. It's like, I don't need this anymore. You're also wanting to become more efficient and effective in working with money. And I would encourage you to find out about any women's groups that deal with financial education that will support you in what you want to do. And I think you will have the financial independence that you want. It's going to take you a while, maybe a few years, but I think you will have it. And you're going to be able then to work with some younger people and help them achieve some of their objectives as well. So I think eventually there's going to be more of a teaching mode you're going to find yourself in, involved with. So I really like what I'm watching here, but I know that there's a bit of fear at the base because you're concerned that you may not be doing everything for yourself that you should be doing. And I want to say, be patient. Take one day at a time, one step at a time. Be deliberate, be consistent, and you'll reach your objectives, including the strength of health that you really want. It's being deliberate and thoughtfully aware of what you do and how you do it. What would you like to ask me today, Janine?
Wow, no, a lot of what you said made sense to me about being able to disassociate myself from past events that weren't quite pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
But, what I wanted to focus on was I'm trying to negotiate a deal with a local university here. Mm-hmm. So that I could create and host a TV show on a local cable network that would run through their station.
Mm-hmm. Well, give me a minute. We're going to take a break for just a moment. And then when we come back, let me answer your question for you.
That'll be fine.
Will you stay on the line, Janine?
Oh, definitely.
All right, my dear. We'll be coming back shortly. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for just a moment. We'll be right back, 888-815-9756. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
All right, dear. Now, you had asked a question about negotiating something with your university. Now, regarding doing a television program through their cable program, what I would say is get to know the person that is working there, but more importantly, have a very good description of the format that you want to utilize. And you may find that dependent on the scheduling, because a lot of people want to be on television, and this is a very safe, comfortable environment to be in. And depending on what their studio is like, I would say go and examine the studio and talk to the people, which you probably already have to a degree, but get to know them. And if possible, do some volunteer work with them. Because what it's going to enable you to accomplish is a connection with them. Because if you are going to do this, you're going to have a crew of your own. So you want to become known to some of the people there who may want to volunteer with you. But have a good format and have it oriented in a way and manner that is going to be conducive to the interests and to the betterment of the community. What's the format you're thinking of using?
Well, when I think of formats, what come to my mind are people. So I was thinking something such as a regular talk show where I can bring people in from all walks of life. And as you said, something that could benefit the community. So we're in a military community, but it does not need to be limited to just catering to military people. But that's one avenue. You know, I actually was able to get a list of authors that have written on all sorts of subjects from A to Z. So I want to make it well-rounded, family-oriented, demographics, maybe from 25 on up?
Well, I think what you are looking at, an eclectic format, is a very good one. I think that you need to be comfortable in your own skin with being able to share with people on air what needs to be brought forth. So if you were going to do a show, let's say once a week, and it was going to be for an hour, that hour of time, you're going to have to very carefully plan out. You need to have material. You might even want to have as many as three guests in that hour, dependent on what their subject matter is. Because people talk very quickly, and you can cover a lot of information within a very short period of time. And once the word gets out about what your show is, you're going to find you'll have people standing in line to be on the air, but you've got to be able to be prepared. And I would encourage you strongly, because I think it's going to take you a while. Let me answer your question that you directed to me. I think it's going to take you up to 6 to 9 months to be able to get your foot in the door. So I would like to encourage you to really be aware of how you speak, how you present yourself. Explore. Keep the interaction up with the people that are at the cable station and develop a rapport with them. Go to some Toastmaster meetings so you learn how to present comfortably and easily. I just think Toastmasters is one of the best organizations, period, that's ever been. And it's a very safe environment. But you want to polish your skills. You want to be able to be at ease. Because when you're interviewing someone, you want to have that comfort, that camaraderie that goes between the two of you. When you're watching a talk show on television, look at that person and say, what do I like about what they're doing? What don't I like? What would I want to incorporate? What would I want to ignore? And I think it could be a tremendous, tremendous benefit to you as well as to the people that would be on your program. Am I making sense to you?
Oh, yes, you are.
Well, I'm so glad. Well, you'll have to call me back and let me know how it's going. But if I, again, I'll repeat it, the suggestions. One, get to know the people at the cable company. Two, volunteer, get involved, see what you have to have. Are you going to have to bring in your own set? Will they have materials there for you? What do you need to do to create your persona on stage with the television show? Three, join Toastmasters. And feel comfortable about presentation and speaking. And four, watch other talk shows. See what you like, see what you don't like. Because on television, everything shows. Everything. So you need to be aware, and you need to be comfortable in how you present yourself. Thank you, Janine, and you have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you. You also. Good night.
Good night. This is Donna Sebo, and if you want to give me a buzz, the telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. Now, don't forget, tomorrow we're talking about Gilligan's Island. Have you ever wanted sometimes to fix something different for a holiday dish? My goodness, I know when Christmas comes around, I have this house full of people, and I'm just fixing all kinds of things. And it usually takes me, I don't know what it does for you guys, but it takes me sometimes as long as 2 weeks. I start preparing certain foods 2 weeks in advance so that I don't have to be worried about things at the last minute. When I say foods, it could be like I have my special fruit cake recipe and I have all kinds of things that I can fix and then I can put aside. They can be stored and then all they have to do is be laid out at the right time. But there are sometimes things that you want to do a little bit differently. And I came across a layered cranberry mold recipe, and a lot of people don't think of fixing a jello type of a dessert, but I'll tell you what, this cranberry mold is really good, and it is so pretty when you present it. And cranberry is one of my favorite foods, and I love to do the cranberry relish things and all of that kind of good stuff. But I thought I would share this with you today, and it's just, you know, just a wonderful presentation. You can use your prettiest 10-cup mold, whatever you might have, a bundt pan works just beautifully. But let me give you this recipe because I really think that it is worth doing. All you need is one Gala apple, and you want to thinly slice it. So if you have a food processor, put in the thinnest slicing blade you've got, put that apple in and let it zap away. And then you're going to need 3 packages of cranberry-flavored gelatin mix, and those are 3 ounces each, 3 packages of that, 2 cups of boiling water, and a cup of ice-cold water, 2 cups of boiling water, a cup of ice-cold water, 1 cup of red wine or pomegranate juice. Now, the wine will have a different flavor from a pomegranate juice, so it's up to you, whichever one you want to use. And then you need 1 can of whole berry cranberry sauce, and then 1 cup of red seedless grapes, and you want to cut those in half. And you need 1 envelope of unflavored gelatin, 1 pound of cream cheese, you want that at room temperature, and 1 cup of fat-free plain Greek yogurt. That's a big difference from the American yogurt. 1 cup fat-free plain Greek yogurt. If you can't find the Greek, the other will do just fine. 1/2 cup of sugar, 3/4 of a teaspoon of grated orange zest, and fresh grated zest is better than the other. And then you might want to use some additional apple slices and grapes, whatever you want. You know, mint leaves would be very pretty for a garnish. So this is how you do it. It's really, really simple. You are going to take your 10-cup mold, and you're going to spray it with cooking spray, the nonstick cooking spray, of course, and then you take 1/3 of your apple slices and put them in a row around the bottom of the mold. And, of course, in another bowl, you should have a good-sized bowl, you whisk your gelatin mix into the boiling water until it's dissolved, and then you just keep whisking it away, and it'll dissolve very, very quickly. And then, after it is thoroughly dissolved, you whisk in your cold water and your wine or your pomegranate juice, and then you stir in the cranberry sauce. So all of this is just in one bowl, and then you take 1.5 cups of this cranberry mixture, putting it in a separate bowl, and you stir within that smaller bowl of the cranberry mixture 1/2 cup of the grapes, and you want to put that smaller bowl over a bowl of ice and water. And you want to just stir, and it'll thicken in about 10 or 15 minutes, and you just keep stirring it. And then you spoon that thickened mixture into the mold, smooth the top, and then you refrigerate it until it's almost firm. That'll take you about 20 minutes to 1/2 hour, so you can be busy doing other stuff. Now, what you want to do in the interim, while that's firming up in the refrigerator, you want in a small microwavable safe bowl, you want to sprinkle unflavored gelatin over 2 tablespoons of water, let it stand until softened for 5 to 10 minutes, microwave on high until it is dissolved, put that to side, and then on a medium-high speed, beat your cream cheese mixture, your yogurt, and sugar until smooth. Transfer 3/4 cup of mixture to bowl, cover, and refrigerate. And you know what? I'm out of time. I'm going to have to give the rest of this information to you folks tomorrow. Oh, my goodness. What a deal, huh? To stop in the middle of a recipe. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have a fabulous day. I'll repeat this delicious recipe tomorrow, okay? It's a deal. Talk to you then. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.